Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome once again into another edition of the Brotherly Glove Podcast. Two brothers from Philly talking all things Philly sports. We've seen it all, the best and worst of the teams, the players, the coaches, the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows, the insanity that is being a Philadelphia sports fan. Oh, yeah, and we've covered it all. Not only 80 years of fandom, 30 years combined in sports media, you can't get more inside than that. I'm your host, Kyle Fisher, alongside my co-host, and my brother, Johnny Fisher. In this episode, spring training is upon us. Full squad workouts started on Monday, and we blindly share our spring training storylines to watch with each other, allowing the other brother to react in real time. Plus, we'll hit on some burning topics so far in Philly's spring training, dominating the news cycle so far. Zach Wheeler might need a new display case for his latest trophy. Bryce Harper had a wild interaction with the media yesterday. He told us so himself. And Nick Castellanos wrote a letter to everybody except his old manager, Rob Thompson. But first, Johnny, what's going on?
Spring training. Pitchers and catchers were my three favorite words on the sports calendar. So even though the groundhog said six more weeks of winter and it's still cold here, I think I pointed out to you, I'll try to look for whoever tweeted it, but Shohei Ohtani has a better batting average than that groundhog, so I think it's springtime. The weather's starting to turn. It's a little bit warmer than it's been, so this is the best. I can't wait for baseball to get going.
Look, we both know a lot of crazed Philadelphia sports fans, John, and the Phillies, especially when they're doing well, really brings out some of the best and the worst in some fans. However, I don't know a single soul in the Delaware Valley that didn't put on their phones on Thursday or Friday, hear the pop of that mitt, and just started dreaming about a nice cold beverage in the stands down in South Philly at Citizens Bank Park, watching their Phils run to another 90-plus win season. But there's plenty of stuff to talk about already, despite the fact that spring training just started. And I think the thing that probably dominated the offseason the most, we'll get right into it, Nick Castellanos officially no longer a member of the Philadelphia Phillies. He has been released. The club tried to hold out hope as long as they could to find a trade partner, hoping someone would get desperate, hoping to just get a little bit more financial release. I don't think anybody expected to get a prospect in return, but if a team wanted to cut the line and guarantee instead of fight for him in free agency, they held out hope that they could do so. When it was time to report for spring training, rather, they decided, let's just move on, letting Castellanos go. Clearly, he did have suitors very quickly signing with the San Diego Padres. What his role is will be determined. I saw him doing some first base work already, and both Dombrowski had a press conference speaking about the release at down in Florida. Nick also wrote a letter. Matt Gelb from The Athletic wrote a full-on article, fully vetted, researched article, starting from the incident in June in Miami where Nick Castellanos was benched after an altercation with Rob Thompson on the bench. We now know a lot more details about that. So it's a lot of information. You can find all the details if you need them elsewhere. But Johnny, just to get your initial reactions for the people, what were your thoughts, Nick finally being gone, his letter, and Dombrowski's first press conference in spring talking about the situation?
It was interesting. I didn't know that story. And I think it actually makes a little sense. From the outside, we don't know what we're seeing. You're down there. You might get inklings of things and you see interactions. But it was less about what happened and Castellanos being released. We knew that was coming. For me, I thought the most interesting part of it was the idea that teammates weren't really on board. And I'm not saying with that incident, but on board with, and I know there was fans and some of my friends talk about why don't they just do this? And certain things are difficult to do. And you also have to, as the manager, the head coach, whatever, you've got to make difficult decisions. So it seems like after that, there was a lot of stuff they made some of those decisions, maybe keeping Castellanos in and out of the lineup, making defensive changes a little more often. And I know he really took pride in playing 162 games that one year, but it does seem like he had a really outsized influence and impact emotionally in the room. And that's one of those where I think you can really try to make a move like that. I mean, we all expected this to come, and I know I said to you, I was fine. I think they were they were past the point. And if, especially if he doesn't want to be here, this illuminates a lot of things. But the biggest takeaway for me was about that part of teammates not really being on board, not just with that incident, but with his impact on the culture in there and the relationships. And what I thought was the really pointed one was in Matt Gelb's article, him sitting by himself after they won the division, not really being a part of it. You know, that's a bummer because we've all been there, right? Everybody wants to feel included. And sports, I mean, one of the big things I love about sports, it's competition and it's the camaraderie and the team aspect. And, you know, that stinks for a guy. But I just, if that kind of showed it, then it feels like it wasn't just a, hey, we're tired of this guy's defense, or hey, this incident really blew up and the manager doesn't want him around. It feels like maybe it was just a, we want a different feel in here, different vibe. And I think that's helpful. And that's where I think, you know, some of the stuff I've looked at, just comparing numbers and things, like I know I talked about it before, but I've still been concerned that they're paying $20 million to a guy to go away and then $10 million on top of it to a guy who's been worse the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But to me, they're paying $30 million for a worse option in right field right now. But maybe some of the actual on paper numbers balance differently when the vibe and the feel was different. So that was my biggest thing. Otherwise, this seemed to be expected and, you know, business as usual. We knew who the outfield was going to be. So it was just a formality.
For sure. We all knew it was going here eventually. I think some of the takeaways from me from the entire article and situation, this is something I don't think will last very long. But, you know, they talked about wanting to keep things inside and keep it in-house. You know, they did Castillo a favor by not allowing anybody to see the beer on the in the dugout, which would have resulted in a suspension from Major League Baseball. They kind of just treated it in-house, didn't let that get out until now. But then you have Bryce Harper during his media availability talking about things staying in-house, and we'll get to that in a moment about the not elite comment. It's one side, they did a great job of keeping something in-house. The other side, maybe another guy doesn't feel the same way. Clearly, Nick had a different opinion on Rob and Kevin than a lot of people do, Rob Thompson and Kevin Long. He's two of the guys that he didn't mention in his letter were the manager and the hitting coach, who had been proactive about trying to improve his approach at the plate. And according to Matt Gelb's article, he did not take to that very well. Didn't necessarily respect those two guys on the same level because they haven't been there and done it. Gives you a little bit more insight into his attitude overall. He did one of the first things that he said, you know, this isn't me making assumptions. One of the first things he said was how excited he was in San Diego to play for a manager who's been there and done it and put the jersey on. So it kind of continues some of the things that Matt put in his article. And then the big thing for me was learning the kind of the difference. And I think people having to face a conversation that you don't always have to face is Nick being considered a great person, which in my experience, all signs point to. I mean, incredible father to see him interact with his son the way that he had, both when cameras were looking and when they weren't. This guy is just top-notch dad inspiration from that point of view. Really involves his son in everything, which not every major leaguer has the ability to do, and not every major leaguer does, regardless of whether they're able to or not. But, like, you know, housing young guys when they get called up, like Weston Wilson and Otto Kemp, housing their entire families in that mansion that he had. Like, awesome stuff. Clearly an awesome dude, but then would also play music loud on his portable speaker because he had a good game, but they lost the game, right? So, like, small stuff like that where I could see that weighing on the other players on the team for a long time. And he spent a couple years out of Detroit. He played with other superstars in Detroit, but really once he went to Cincinnati and even the trade to Chicago, he was kind of the guy in his last two stops. And all of a sudden, he's the fourth or fifth most important guy on the Phillies. I don't know how well he adjusted to that. Now, I think it's because you came in with a certain mindset. I could see him adjusting much better to San Diego, kind of knowing where he is in the grand scheme of things now, and probably knowing that the things ended in Philadelphia the way that they did, that you kind of have to go in with a different mindset. So, look, I'm going to root for the guy as a guy. I'm not going to be one of the people booing him when he comes to Philadelphia. I think the Padres are there in June, but To me, it was just – it gave me a lot of good details, and it was expertly reported by Matt Gell, but kind of the end result is exactly what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and I'm in the point where I don't hate the guy as a player or a person. As a fan of the Phillies, I was ready to move on and try and improve that spot and also appreciate what he did while he was here and will root for him going forward. So I hope it works. I hope it's a good fit out there. I mean, I love San Diego. I would love to move to San Diego and start working. And you mentioned, yeah, he didn't mention Thompson and Long. He kind of did without saying it by, you know, his comments were not scorched earth, but he was pretty clear about, like you mentioned him, the idea of coaches or people who had played and stuff. I just pulled up the Padres coaching roster. Craig Stammen's their manager, but bench coaches, hitting coach, infield instructor, one of their infield coaches, Nick Punto, but a bunch of guys who played in the major leagues. So look, if that brings a little bit, if that helps him hear the messages a little better and he improves, that's a beautiful ballpark, tougher place to hit. But you know, as long as he doesn't do it in October against the Phillies, then I'm rooting for him.
Yeah. Nick Punto, man, former Philly, great Nick Punto. How about that? Wow. Yeah, not much else to say on the Casty stuff. I mean, he was always kind to me. I know that not everybody in the media had the best experience with him, but I think it all depends on how you approach guys and what the topic is. And he, even when he didn't have time for me, he made it clear that that was the reason we weren't talking. He wasn't standoffish. He didn't blow me off. Like, I tried to get him one time as he was going in. I said, hey, man, just wanted to ask you two questions about Weston, because I was working on a piece on Weston Wilson. And a couple other guys even said at the time, like, hey, man, we got a meeting right now. And he said, is it a quick one? And I said, yeah. And he's like, all right, go ahead. And, like, he's halfway down the steps, but he took the time to give me the time of day. So always respect him for that. Always respect what I've seen him do off the field. And like you said, just rooting for the guy. Happy he did what he did when he was in Philly. Obviously, you wished it would have went a little bit better. Everybody wants to win a World Series when you have a group of guys like this. But it is what it is. And good luck to him, as long as it's not in October against the Phillies, like you mentioned. Another guy who's had some comments about the Phillies and their leadership recently, but doesn't seem to be going anywhere, is one Bryce Harper, who finally had the opportunity to speak to the media and discuss the topic of, or I guess discuss the comments made by President of Baseball Operations Dave Dombrowski, saying that he's unsure if Bryce will ever be an elite player again, and that's really up to him. Time will tell. So, Johnny, don't know if you heard all the comments from Bryce. I also saw that he did a podcast with the guys from Barstool recently, and I'm sure he went into it a little bit more there. So where's the not elite shirt? Post the Instagram video or TikTok video, whatever it was, wearing the not elite shirt, but then very coy about that. Oh, it doesn't motivate me. Oh, if you make the shirt, I'm going to wear the shirt, which apparently means we need to get some Brotherly Glove merch and mail it out to Bryce Harper's agent. But right.
Drop it off in the clubhouse there.
If you make it, he'll wear it. So we'll figure it out. But what were your thoughts and your takeaways from what Harper had to say about the little tiff that I hope doesn't go beyond this week between him and Dombrowski?
Nothing. he said, I think there's something to be made clear here. There's a point of clarification. He said, I don't need things like that to motivate me, which I completely believe and agree with. Doesn't mean it won't motivate him or hasn't already motivated him. So right. I agree that a guy as driven as Bryce Harper and as successful as Bryce Harper doesn't need something like that to get him going. My belief is that no matter what Dombrowski said about his season last year, Bryce Harper's performance last year would motivate Bryce Harper to be better. And old colleague of mine, Justin Havens, who works on the Baseball is Dead podcast with Dallas Braden and Jared Carabas, he made a really great point, which I'm trying to pull up the numbers and sum them up. But his first 6 years with the Phillies, his OPS was like 925, 940, something like that. His lowest was 882, his first season in Philly. 877, 2022. So the first year it drops below 875, and it's only 844, which I always thought in my mind 850 was like all-star level. You get comments from the GM, like that would chat me if I was Bryce Harper too.
For sure.
So that's where that was my read of Harper's comments, and he was obviously measured about it and had thought about what he was going to say and thought about how it had, you know, how he took it in and had dealt with plenty of time to deal with it already. But to me, the key difference was, no, he doesn't need the GM or anyone else talking about his performance to motivate him. I'm not convinced that it hasn't and it won't. So, you know, what we said last time when it happened, I'll take a pissed off Bryce Harper, especially if he's feeling better. That's going to be great. Yeah, his OPS in his first six seasons in Philly was 924. That's like elite to do that for that long. Yeah, that's a really good season. He did it for six straight. And then, yeah, you get a little bit of a dip with an injury involved. And, you know, he still only missed 30 games. I think he's going to be on fire. And as long as he's healthy, I think he's going to be the Bryce Harper we got used to seeing.
And I think that it shouldn't matter, but I do think that the World Baseball Classic is going to do a lot for Bryce. I think that he's going to be jacked up, getting to put that USA across the chest again. It's been a long time because of the injuries. He wasn't able to participate last time around. You know, we saw what kind of star making power it can have for a guy like Trey Turner right before he joined the Phillies. So to kind of put him on that grand stage again, I think that'll just be a precursor to what we can expect ultimately being a big season. And like you said, that's a great clarification that you made about he doesn't need it. Doesn't mean he won't use it, right? He didn't need Orlando Arcia saying anything about him after a playoff game, but he sure as hell used it clobbering two homers and staring a hole through him that still exists and sent him to Colorado. Like I've never seen a hole completely ruin a guy's promising young career before, but Bryce Harper sure did it to Arcia. So maybe he'll, he did that during the pandemic. He would do sign JT up to the front office. Maybe he'll do a couple gestures up to the front office after some big hits in October. And Dombo can just kick his feet up and smile because maybe that was the grand plan all along, like Adnan Virk hinted last week. So it's interesting times, but I think that, or hope that rather, a lot of the drama goes away as we get deeper into spring training. We just mentioned the World Baseball Classic. Phillies are sending 15 players, so we'll have a chance to see what some of the young guys can do while some of the veterans are away representing their countries. One guy who was invited but unfortunately wasn't able to go, we all know about his issues, his health issues, Zach Wheeler. He has found himself back in big league camp, looking good, throwing from 120 feet today, which is a great progression for him. Still unclear on the timetable. I don't believe he's thrown off a mound just yet. But during his surgery for his recovery from thoracic outlet syndrome, they had to remove one of his ribs. And one of the first things that he told reporters in Clearwater, well, he kept it. So, Johnny, that leads me to one question. Have you had a body part removed? And if so, would you keep it?
No, would not keep it. When I was a kid and broke my arm for the first time, you get the cast on. It's a strange thing to be excited about. But as a kid, you're excited to get people to sign it, all this stuff. And they cut it off and they tell you you can keep it. And I'm thinking, well, that would be cool. And I'm not really sure why. I remember mom and dad saying, that thing's going to stink, man. Like, you sure you're going to want this?
Yep.
And I think I did. And you know, it doesn't stink like trash. Like it doesn't, it's just not, oh my God, I can't walk in the room with it. But yeah, I think after a while, it's kind of sitting there and it's already been cut in half and you're like, all right. So no, never kept the body part. I've had some removed, but I don't even know. I don't think I ever saw them once they were out. So not here.
Yeah. I don't know if they would have let me keep my appendix. I don't think those are things that, you know, once you're removed, if you're getting that removed, it's busting open anyway. Right. So I don't know if they would have let me, but I think if they took a rib out, I'd find a place on the shelf for it. Put it on a little stand like it's one of those Viking horns or something. You know, what the hell? It's a great conversation piece. You have company over. Hey, what the hell's that thing? Would you have a great set of baby back ribs one time? No, as a matter of fact, I tried to make a woman. I mean, I had a nice surgery and found myself back out on the mound. I just thought that was a fun story. You know, everything else was drama related, but man, Zach Wheeler keeping the rib. The most unfortunate part to me is like everybody's kind of reaction was like, ew, weird. But he said it was in the closet. You're going to keep it. Put that thing on display, man. What the hell? I'm going to show up to the ballpark with a display case for him, I think.
And I don't know what's gross about it. Like, do people think that they just pulled it out and that's it? They didn't touch it? You know, like,
they probably cleaned it first, right? Right.
professional athletes are wired differently. So if this is something he wants or needs, have at it. But is there not for me?
So I know you said that there's none of the body parts you've had removed you would keep, but is there one you would?
I can't think of one on the spot. I mean, I think like the brain is fascinating, but if I get my brain removed, I probably
I'm not keeping it, right? Somebody else.
And I kept it, I probably wouldn't be able to enjoy it. So yeah, nothing jumps out to me that I would keep. What about you?
We'll have to figure it out. I think the one that I've heard from guys before, we're not going to talk about on the pod, but if you get one of your boys removed, hanging on to that, I wouldn't want to do that personally, but I've heard that one before.
So you've talked about this before. This is the first time I've thought about this ever.
Well, that's why you have me around, John, because I think about the weird stuff like this. That's why you keep me around, man.
The good news is it seems like the rest of the opening of spring training has been uneventful. Like little nick injury here and there, guys starting off, you know, you kind of a little bit of soreness once you really start ramping up. But, you know, when we were throwing this together, there weren't a whole lot of newsy things that seemed to happen. And one was expected and it was just a timing thing. One was comments on something that happened months ago. I think it's a good thing that there hasn't really been much else. So I'm excited to get more reports and, you know, just about what guys are doing, and especially some of the new faces.
Definitely. And we're going to get into our spring training storyline segment in a moment. Just two things I wanted to mention real quick, because I meant to bring it up during the Nick conversation and flipped it. So you mentioned how they're paying $30 million for right field, and on paper they got worse. One thing you can always think about it, if you take WAR as your sole, we saw this on Twitter, so I don't want to take credit for it, but if you take that as like the number one driver for you when you're looking at statistics or advanced metrics, then they paid a lot of money to make another NL contender worse. I'm okay with that, right? I mean, $18 million, basically $19 million to give negative WAR to another competitor. I'm okay with that. And then one thing Todd Zielecki wanted to point out, and this is something I had not considered, not a ton of money in the grand scheme of things, but they do save the money on the league minimum salary, so the $780,000 league minimum salary, but they're also saving the tax related to Nick Castellanos. So what everybody thought was a $780,000 savings really turns out to be more than $1.5 million. Not that that's a huge difference, but when you need to improve in the margins mid-season, that is something to consider, that they did save a little bit more for luxury tax purposes as well. So a little north of $1.5 million of savings as opposed to the 780 like people initially thought.
Well, I'm happy for the rich ownership group of the Phillies.
Yes, yes. Who doesn't love when the rich get to keep their money? It's everybody's mm-hmm. favorite thing, especially nowadays. Well, Johnny, I think that about wraps it for the burning news out of the first few days of full squad workouts. And it takes us into the segment that I like that you brought it up. I think it was a great idea. The storylines that we're looking at as individuals, we didn't want to share this with each other ahead of time so that way we could have some live reactions, live interactions. But our things to watch during Philly's spring training, again, this is a team that won 96 games last year, still looking for that elusive World Series championship, obviously facing a dominant Dodgers squad in the playoffs last year who added even more firepower in the form of Kyle Tucker and Edwin Diaz. So they are looking as dangerous as ever. The Phillies, not as big of moves, some potential addition by subtraction, other additions, hopefully by addition. Johnny, we've gone over the moves in the past, so not to get too bogged down in all those details, give me your first one. What is your spring training storyline that you're watching closely now that things have gotten underway down in Clearwater?
So I'll wrap up what we started with Castellanos. I know I've mentioned it before. My big thing is the outfield was a weak spot, and I think they've spent more money and not improved it. And I am absolutely ready to be proven wrong. And I am not – this. I don't mean this negatively about the players. I know when you told me they signed Garcia, I thought, oh, great. He, to me, in my mind, fit that $10 million flyer of Austin Hayes, Max Kepler, Garcia. right-handed guy. He's been an all-star pretty recently, two-time all-star, got MVP votes a couple years ago. He's won a gold glove in the outfield. And I'll tell you, I think I've only seen him with his full jersey and full uniform on. This guy looks like a Greek god. So if
my goodness.
I don't know if he's always looked like that or if he's just gotten like it just, you know, better shape, whatever. But I'd like to see a guy like that mash a couple balls in Citizens Bank Park this summer. But look, I read some articles and talked about specific things they're going to work on with him. But the thing that concerns me is I looked at the past 2 years and I didn't do that to try to cut out his 2023 All-Star season. But over the last 2 years, his on-base percentage, slugging percentage, and strikeout rate are all worse than Castellanos have been. So I think one thing that is encouraging are some of the underlying things. Average exit velo, he hits the ball harder than Castellanos has. And their swing and miss rate's about the same. Garcia's chase rate has been a decent chunk lower over the last 2 years. So if those results aren't there, but that kind of stuff's there and they can refine it, I think there's a chance. But I think right now on paper, it looks like they an extra 50% spend for the same player a little worse. So I want to be proven wrong about that because I do like what this guy could bring. I didn't see it at the moment of the signing that, hey, this is the guy they're going to – we know Castellanos is likely gone. This is the guy it's going to be. I've thrown out what I would have done differently and maneuvered things a little bit. So that's been my big thing. And, again, I'm not negative generally. I'm rooting for Adolis Garcia, and I'm rooting for the Phillies. But it just does concern me that – he's going to be 33 when the season starts. If this is the time where he, makes an improvement and corrects something, that's great. And I think it's certainly possible. I also don't want to make it sound like guys can't do this stuff. But I just look at it. The last 2 years, this is a small downgrade, and they're spending a whole ton of money that might have kept them from doing other things. And that worries me. So the outfield still is a concern. And I think one of the pieces – we'll get into my next storyline, but I know you're a little higher on Garcia and what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Garcia. He is, he had that incredible season in 2023, that great postseason run especially. But the thing that stood out to me the most about that 2023 season was Garcia's, you talked about it, he's never been a patient hitter, but that 2023 season was the most patient he was. His swing and miss went down big time. He's peaked again the last 2 years, but at 30 and 31 years old to at that late in your career, begin being more patient and taking more pitches and decreasing. And the fact that the Phillies have shown that they can do that with players last season before the injury, Alec Bohm increased his improved his chase rate. Rather, Nick Castellanos improved his chase rate and his walk rate earlier in the season last season. He eventually switched it because overall his game wasn't working, but he was able to do that. The entire group as a whole improved their patient numbers. So their chase rate, their seeing more pitches in at bats, their walk rates went up, their strikeout rates went down in the first 2 months of the season. And that is big because of Kevin Long. And the fact that Kevin Long and the assistant hitting coaches went right away to meet with Garcia after he signed and started preaching about what they wanted to focus on, started doing dry runs in cages, showing him exactly like, hey, just try and be more selective, take more pitches, and we'll show you that those pitches that look close weren't really as close as you thought. So some of the early returns from that offseason workout have been promising. Obviously, I'm not guaranteeing that his swing rate and chase rate are all of a sudden going to plummet again, but the fact that he has shown a propensity in his 30s the ability to cut down on some of those things that resulted in weaker numbers. You can see looking at his Statcast page that even last year and the year before, despite those numbers being bad, when he makes contact, he hits the crap out of the ball. So if he becomes more selective and hits more pitches in the zone, even if he has a lot of strikeouts, those numbers should just increase naturally without overhauling everything that the guy does. And what he does on defense, to me, is a marked improvement over what Nick Castellanos gave you. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. I think that if he breaks even with Nick offensively, which I don't anticipate, but if he breaks even with what Nick Castellanos did offensively last year, it's still an overall improvement because of the defense. For that reason alone, I'm excited, regardless of what I see in spring. But to me, you know, especially with one of the battles being who's going to bat behind Harper and Schwarber, if you can get some exciting game film from Garcia in the spring, that should excite people going into the regular season.
Yeah, I'm gonna not get excited about spring training, but
that's fair.
That also, that is tough because, you know, we've got to wait. I have to wait now another 6 weeks to actually think about what Garcia might bring to the table. And I'm sure I'll be guilty of, oh man, he homered three times this week. Things are looking up. But yeah, this is very much a I need to see it to believe it. I want to be hopeful, but you know, two season sample size is big, and especially at this point of his career, his age. You know, he's had that one season he slugged 500. It's his only time. Like, everything else has been in the 450 range or lower, 441 career slugging. That's not a bad number. It's higher than what Castellanos did while he was here. But yeah, look, if he makes the adjustments and does something, it's only a 1 year deal. Great. But what concerns me about it is, you know, I like that before last year, he had four straight 25 homer seasons. Last year, he was down to 19. That includes 39 in 2023. And in that playoff run, when they won the World Series that year, he homered eight times in 15 games in the playoffs. So it's there. But, you know, just that steady drop over the last couple seasons. The reason that concerns me, I don't really know what to make of this or what it means, but we know Schwarber was awesome last year. He had 56 home runs. He had more than twice as many as anyone on the team, which I guess, you know, sometimes when you hit that many, that's just the result. But the Phillies have also lost their number three and number four home run hitters from last year. Maybe I should have done that as a trivia question, like who were the top four in home runs last year, but it was Schwarber way ahead of Harper, and then third on the team was Max Kepler, and fourth was Nick Castellanos. And this is a team that we keep talking about. They won 96 games, but they were like top 10 in slugging, top 10 in runs. They did all this stuff that at the end of the year looked really good. Thompson talks about back of the baseball card. But for a team that we felt like they needed to improve spots, that's an opportunity there if Garcia can get back into 25-plus. And I think, you know, the change in ballpark might help him. So I hope that's what happens, and he'll be playing every day, and he seems happy here. I know I read in one of the articles that he's been a longtime friend and workout partner of Edmundo Sosa. So, you know, maybe he brings something out of him and just some comfort and having a familiar face. But I'm in very much wait-and-see mode on Garcia and whether that's an improvement over what we've seen the last few years.
Yeah, I think that there doesn't seem to be the same promise or implied promise that was given to Max Kepler last year that was given to Whit Merrifield the year before. I think that they're going to give him a short run to play nearly every day, but again, they're in championship mode. They're not going to let a guy figure it out, especially on a one-year deal. I think they're going to, or hope that they're going to learn from Max Kepler last year. And if this guy's really struggling, we got to change something, platoon, whatever we got to do.
There's been no promise, but what are the answers? If they're among things, right. Garcia's not cutting it. I mean, what's the move to make there?
You're going to have to plug and play and figure it out. Trust one of your minor leaguers. Put Edmundo Sosa out there in left field every day. I mean, you're going to – Otto Kemp plays more in the outfield. I mean, it's not a guarantee that it's an easy fix, but I think they'd be smart to not just – well, he's hitting 200, but who else do we have? And just keep rolling him out there like they did with Kepler every day.
Yeah, maybe they didn't promise him anything, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer would be if, let's, you know, someone decides it's not working. At least it's not in house right now, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, they have promised on a lot of young guys, but you're talking about just as much of a wild card with calling a kid up as you are with a guy who's trying to recover. So, right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's no obvious answer, but I think that whether I anticipate them doing it, fans will be clamoring for something to change if this is the third or fourth year in a row where your one-year guy just struggles out of the gate.
Yep. All right, what's your first storyline, the thing that you're really thinking about through spring training?
So the number one thing for me through spring training is what does Andrew Painter look like? Not necessarily, oh, yeah, I know that, you know, they, he seems like he's penciled in or penned in or however you want to phrase it for that fourth or fifth spot in the rotation. But this is a kid who everybody thought that was going to happen 2-3 years ago. He goes through the Tommy John surgery, has a very long recovery. Last year struggled mightily at times. There are some reports I saw in The Athletic. They talked about the Phillies coaching staff and front office didn't want to overhaul anything with Painter during the season last season. They wanted him to get through a regular season and just feel like he had a semi-normal big league year. But they talked about him dropping and drooping his arm slot a lot and his fastball location suffered as a result. You saw a lot of times his breaking pitches were still doing what they wanted to do or what they intended to do, but without that fastball setting them up first, it was really difficult to get people to bite, forcing him to throw the breaking pitches a little bit more often, which then resulted in those pitches getting hung and sent over the fence. So to me, I think especially that fastball, how does he handle the fastball during spring training is going to be very telling, because similar to what you just mentioned about the outfield, there's no obvious choice if he's not ready to start the season. If he isn't good to go, you know, Walker Buehler, a former Philly, he just signed a minor league deal with the Padres. Some other folks that we had mentioned in previous weeks, like Griffin Canning, he signed a minor league deal. Chris Bassett signed for more money than I expected. There's a couple guys who I anticipated being depth pieces and minor league options who have either already chosen another place or signed for more than I think the Phillies were willing to spend. And that puts a lot of pressure on a kid that they've tried not to put a lot of pressure on these last 2 years. So to me, seeing how he does, and even if it's not impressive numbers, if the poise is there, if the location's starting to come back, and even if it's going to take a little bit of time to perfect it, does he look comfortable out there on the mound for when the season starts? So to me, the number one thing I'm watching all season long, obviously I'll watch everybody, but the person I'm paying the most attention to is going to be Andrew Painter and that fastball location.
Yeah, you said penciled in. Sometimes it works out early in the season where you can get to like the third or fourth series with some off days before you actually need your fifth starter. They're going to need a fifth starter by game six. And if Andrew Painter isn't one of those guys, then tell me who the rest are. He is going to start one of the first six games for them.
Yeah. But if he's coming out there, not being able to locate the fastball and has like a 5.30 ERA in spring, I'm not feeling good about it, even if he is one of the first five guys out there in the first five games. It's just you don't want him to look like he did last year. And one of the reasons they didn't call him up, even at times where they needed a starting pitcher, was they didn't want to shoot his confidence. And I was never an athlete on that kind of level or a competitor on that kind of level to understand. But still 22, you want to protect him. You want to make sure that he's good to go. But at what point do you – I think this might be the year, whether it's because of organizational choices or decisions or just not having the depth and not wanting to add the depth. At what point do you go, look, man, we can't have the training wheels off on anymore. We got to let you go and just figure it out. And this feels like this is going to be that year, regardless of how he looks in spring, which could be dangerous. And I don't know how you feel about that when it comes to mentality. And I know that some people feel like, I've heard some fans or some hot take people out there talk about how it could, oh, your baby and the kid now, how careful do you really need to be with him? Do you have any thoughts on like, it's just time to take the training wheels off and let him go? Or, hey, if he looks really rough in spring, we're going to have to figure something else out and let this kid figure it out in the minors.
Well, one of the concerns I would have for that from our perspective is, and I say this all the time, we don't know what people are trying to do in spring training games. Guys might have an outing where they just throw their fastball because they're trying to work on locating it. And it's more important for whatever plan they're enacting that Andrew Painter goes out there and tries to locate 50 fastballs a certain way rather than whatever the result of those 50 fastballs is. So to just, I try really hard not to look at the box score and stats and things of saying, well, hey, if Painter's ERA was north of five, he's not ready. If the breaking ball looks sharp, if he talks about his changed you know, going back to a higher arm angle and getting more carry and less run on the fastball. Like, if he feels good about his ability to execute his pitches, that's fine. And if Real Muto and Cotham and the rest of the coaching staff feel good about it, then that's fine. I mean, he's going to have to get, I think, 10 to 12 starts before you decide if something's not going well and we need to give him a break. But I would also let me try to add this. Like, this will be one of my other things. One of my storylines was about how big a deal it is that rookies are going to be counted on right now. And I know I've heard you talk about, and a lot of others, that part of what people have been upset about in general lately is the Phillies not having those prospects come up and break through and add that the injection of energy and youth into this really veteran heavy team. And now that those guys are here, people are complaining. Now, I don't know if it's all the same people. My concern is just that when it becomes such a need, and if those guys are like banging down the door, I mean, look, Justin Crawford put up really good things, really good numbers, and seems to be the going line is he doesn't have anything left to prove in the minor leagues. But again, they weren't, maybe it's because they got Bader last year at the deadline, but you know, we talked about Castellanos not being a full-time player towards the end. You know, it concerns me that there was a lot of talk that Crawford is much better suited defensively to play left or right, and they're sticking him in center. And he's going to bat the bottom of the lineup. He's going to have veterans around him. And we talk often about how Thompson puts people in the right positions. But same idea, like Harrison Bader isn't there. I guess Johan Rojas is there, but I think everybody has already decided Johan Rojas is not the answer. If he scuffles for a month, are we excited that Johan Rojas is out there, or do you let the young kid get more time to try to figure it out? So I also think the same thing about Painter, and he's going to have to get time unless there's a move in the next 4 to 6 weeks that the Phillies pull out. And of course, we also know the Phillies have had remarkable pitching health the last few years. And I think it can be, Phillies fans might get really shocked if one of these guys goes down. And it wasn't as big a deal last year because they still had six starters last year, and not including Andrew Painter, who was, right, we were all hoping like, hey, when's his turn? Like, just really quick math I did earlier, they have to replace 157 innings from Ranger Suarez. Zach Wheeler averages 200 innings a year. He was on pace for 200 last year. So every month he misses, they've got to replace another 33 some odd innings. That's, what is that, 5 to 6 starts? And so 157 from Ranger, 33 every month from Wheeler. It's just, you know, crack math here. Some of that's going to come from Aaron Nola. He threw 94 innings last year. His previous 7 full seasons, he averaged 194. So if he's just out there, you know, some of those innings will come from him. But Andrew Painter, with the injury, has pitched 133 professional innings the past 3 seasons. That's not, we're talking 45 innings a year. I mean, he may blow past his 3-year total in the middle of May, right? When we're trying to think like, hey, if he's scuffling a little bit, is there something to do? I just try to think, if a guy throws 100, and we know starters don't go as long, but the Phillies, what did I say earlier? The Phillies starters have thrown, I don't know, 50 more innings than any other team last year. And that's with Wheeler missing the last 6 weeks, Nola missing 3 months. Their starting pitchers, like Ranger Suarez, averaged 6 innings per start for the first time in his career. Thompson goes to those guys, and those guys respond. So if this is going to be a very different look for, I think, Phillies fans and for the coaching staff and organization, the players on the team, if they're trying to mix and match a little bit more. We've just had this complete trust and understanding that the starters are going to go into the sixth. There was something, I got to look it up. Just number of pitches that Phillies starters threw in the 7th inning or later, just like even that comparison to other teams was just startling. let alone the innings and all that stuff. But yeah, that coat to me, that's a combination. That was going to be my next one. And that's what it breaks down to me, is that I just don't think they have a lot of options right now. You don't want to wear this kid out, but like, even if he's not doing well, I think I'd have the opposite concern. Let's say coming back into the All-Star break, the dog days of August, if he is making all of his starts, and I'm sure they're not going to have him go 6-7 innings every single time, but if he's approaching 100-120 innings, I mean, in the middle of August, if you're making a playoff run, how many innings are left on a starting pitcher's arm? Now,
right,
again, in the playoffs, things get a little shorter. Maybe he's not if everybody stays healthy and Wheeler's back in, then maybe Painter isn't making playoff starts, and that's okay. You utilize him a different way. But I think there's concern on both ends for me, and it you know, it goes in with Crawford that, like, there's going to be this reliance. Now, again, they're not going to be batting cleanup and starting every 5 days, you know, against the other team's ace. But I still think that right now it seems like they don't have a lot of flexibility. And I don't want to say they've backed themselves into a corner, but it does seem like there's just not a lot of things they can do. It seems really like the guys that we've thought about and the guys we're talking about, that's it. And if something goes wrong, I just don't know what the answer – there's not an obvious answer.
Yeah, when the questions before were, oh, man, what are they going to do in the outfield? What are they going to do in the rotation? It was like, oh, well, at least you have these top prospects who look like they're about to break out, who, if we need reinforcements, we can go to them, whether it's Painter or Abel or Crawford. Well, now those are the guys. And like you said, they're pretty thin at the top level of the minors, especially to be able to backfill if needed. That's one thing that I think I haven't heard mentioned enough, and I'm glad you pointed out, like, it's not just that they're playing young guys, it's that they are relying on these young guys, and what do you do if that doesn't work? So that, it's a good shout by you. That's something I hadn't really heard or thought too much or thought of myself, was the required or the relying on that the Phillies will be doing on young guys' shoulders.
And I don't want to have it like too negative. Like, I think these guys can't be good. I think they can. And I just want everybody to realize it's so much easier to remember, whether it's within our organization or on other teams, like guys with really high prospect rankings, we seem to only remember the ones that come out of the gates like all-stars. And I just don't think it happens that often. And I think we have to be willing to be patient with these guys. And I still think that, for two reasons, I think you don't want to yo-yo these guys in and out of the lineup or in and out of the major leagues. But I also think they just don't have, there's not that fourth outfield veteran sitting there that, like, hey, just, you know, give Crawford a 2-week breather and throw this guy out there. I just don't think they have that. I don't think they have it in the rotation. So I would say it's less about concern for me about their ability to perform. It's I guess it's a message to me as a fan and all my fan friends and anyone watching that we have to be willing to be patient with these guys. It doesn't always look perfect from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, for people who are maybe not being patient, I'll remind you of two former Phillies aces who had some early success and then were sent down to the minors before eventually winning Cy Young awards themselves. That would be one Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee, two of the best pitchers in Phillies history, two of the best pitchers of an era. Both were sent down to the minors because they struggled as young men and adjusting to the big leagues. And then both win Cy Youngs, end up on one of the best pitching staffs in the history of baseball. I mean, it's like you said, patience, especially to me, especially with pitchers, especially the way that pitchers can get injured easily, even if it's a minor injury nowadays, you really have to be extra patient with those guys. And, you know, not everybody's going to come up and be Fernando Tatis Jr. People didn't even think he was going to be who he was. So maybe give Justin Crawford a chance to show you who he's going to be instead of putting otherworldly expectations on him.
Yep. So I was piggybacking off the end of yours, and that was going to be my next storyline. So do you have anything? What's your next storyline?
Next storyline for me, and I know it matters a little less in spring training, but is going to be the revamped bullpen. You know, a lot of talk in the offseason was, oh, well, they didn't do enough, or they're running it back. Then Rob Thompson turns it into a math equation. Oh, well, technically 23.7% of our whatever, you know, roughly 25% of the roster turns over. And then the general response to that that I've heard, whether it be just fans online or on sports talk radio, was, oh, well, it's mostly in the bullpen, though. Well, it goes beyond just putting a new name out there for what they did. You know, the people may not recall this as well because the bullpen was very good on paper. I mean, especially after the acquisition of Joan Duran, that it obviously was greatly improved. But they had a problem all year long last year with guys like Romano and Ross and even guys like Matt Strom, where their fly ball rates all started to peak. Last season, the Phillies bullpen had the lightest workload in the major leagues and had the fourth worst rate of homers per nine. Mm-hmm. They gave up fly balls at an alarming rate. They had the 15th most homers allowed in the majors, despite having the lightest workload. And they have done a lot to revamp that exact issue, right? Duran had the single highest ground ball rate in the majors for relievers who had at least 150 batted balls against him. Keller, 14th in that same category. Bolin and Alvarado were both above the major league average last season. So you're talking about two of those guys weren't even on the team at all last season, and two guys, for different reasons, were not on the team for half the season. So now you're going to get full seasons of four of the best ground ball pitchers in baseball, four guys above average, two in the top 15. Put it on the flip side, I was a big fan of Matt Strom, and he was one of the most effective lefties over the last 3 years, but the cracks were starting to show last season. He was 119th last year in ground ball rate, dead last among qualified relievers. He was only tagged for five homers, but gave up a key home run in the postseason to Teoscar Hernandez. And that fly ball rate was the worst rate of his career. Again, yep. The homers didn't necessarily translate all season long, but it eventually caught up to him when it mattered most. So you're talking about a complete, and I even looked it up. I mean, I know people know how bad they were, but Jordan Romano had one of the worst fly ball rates in the league and one of the worst fly ball to home run conversion rates. Joe Ross had one of the worst fly ball to home run conversion rates. These are two guys who were brought in to be effective relievers last year. Neither one was even remotely effective, and both were cut before the season ended, for all intents and purposes. I know Romano technically stayed on the team, but both were essentially shipped off before the year ended. And they took out Carlos Hernandez, even, for those who don't remember him, was a last-minute grab right before the season started because he showed potential, but he didn't have any flexibility. Well, one thing that they did beyond adding a bunch of relievers with high ground ball rates, even guys like Backus and Pop have strong ground ball rates and low fly ball rates, they took out a lot of guys who didn't have flexibility and had a propensity to give up fly balls in a park that doesn't do well when fly balls are hit in Citizens Bank Park, and they replaced him with a bunch of dudes who keep the ball on the ground for a improved defensive infield. And again, you're talking about full seasons of some of the most effective ground ball pitchers in the league. This is a complete revamp, and you mentioned it a moment ago, Thompson has done all that he can do to put these guys in successful positions. I'm going to be really excited to watch what he does with them and how he mixes and matches, especially later in spring training. But I'm excited to see what these guys do because it is a true revamp of the bullpen and can hopefully, if it works out to the way that they imagined, help make up for some of those innings that you just mentioned that they're losing in the starting rotation.
Yeah, and I think that's the idea. If you have a really strong rotation, you build as strong of a bullpen as you can. And yeah, those guys are, you lean on the bullpen less, they should be fresher, and you can mix and match a little bit better and use guys in different ways. So I think the thing you've pointed this out a couple of times, I think it's really smart, is it's easy for us to just look at ERA and strikeouts and things. There's a very clear plan with the guys they're targeting and acquiring. And I think that's great that they're doing that. And yeah, it seems like it's the right kind of people. I mean, you know, the one thing we got to remember, like we talk about it being, you know, our park can be good for hitters. It's the same. It's good for other hitters too, even if we have good pitchers, like right. Some stuff is going to happen. Fly balls are going to leave the ballpark here. So, you know, give a little bit of leeway for guys, especially in like, if we're talking about on this one game, this guy, of course, we're going to remember the big moments, but yeah, I really like that. There's a, they've got a clear plan in place and the kinds of people they're targeting and they're getting them. I think it's going to be effective. And that's the bullpen is something to be really excited about for sure.
Yeah. And just final note on it for me, one of the things that Thompson has mentioned in the past about the bullpen going into last year specifically was you want flexibility at the end of the bullpen so you can move guys in and out either because guys are being overworked or you want to give a guy a break or, hey, this guy's hot right now, let's call him up for a couple weeks. They haven't had that in the past years, but you're talking about a lot of options. I mean, three options from Orion Kerkring, who I don't expect them to be used on, but a lot of guys have options this year. You started last year with one person in the bullpen having options, and it was Orion Kerkring, who, again, not going anywhere unless something cataclysmic happens to the guy. So I anticipate them moving through a lot of pieces. You know, you have a Rule 5 pick that can help you early in the season. If it doesn't work out, you cut bait and move on, and you have other guys with one, two, or three options left who all are promising and all are kind of within that mold that they're looking for, keeping the ball on the ground. You know, this is a pen that had the fourth worst ground ball rate last season. All the talk about how good you are, how improved the defense was at shortstop, how good you are at second, how good Bryce looked, how improved Alec Bohm is. But if you don't have the ability to flash that because everything's being hit over your head, it's not going to show as much or be as valuable as it could be. This change in approach in the bullpen should not only result in better numbers for those pitchers themselves, but should make that infield defense look that much better, turning more double plays, forcing guys to kind of get out of their comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah, I like it.
Full transparency, that was my last spring training topic going in. So do you have anything else on storylines you want to watch before going into spring training for these Phils?
My other storyline is we've talked about the clubhouse, the vibe, music and all that stuff. Who's going to be in charge in the clubhouse? Is it still Schwarber and Harper? Who's the DJ? Does Sanchez have a little more sway? Does Wheeler take the time where he's not out there competing, you know, and still getting healthy? Can he take on some of that responsibility? Is your boy Garrett Stubbs back in the mix? Or is there somebody else that I don't know about that is going to take over and be the, you know, be the vibes, the chief vibes officer in that clubhouse?
Yeah, it's going to be something interesting to watch. I think, you know, obviously Schwarber being back is really important for that. He is the emotional leader for the team. But yeah, that is going to be interesting. You know, two of the guys who were more outspoken are now off the team. A lot of new faces in there, a lot of young guys that you want to be leaders by example. Who's going to be the one to step up and kind of right the ship, essentially, for a team that seems to be a little in flux in the clubhouse? I like it. Something to watch. Oh, you know, I did think of another one.
Okay.
Another one is, can Aiden Miller force his way onto the opening day roster?
Onto the roster? Because, like, I wouldn't want him – he's played eight games above AA. I wouldn't want him on the roster sitting somewhere.
No, I mean, it would be as a starter. I think that if he forced his way in, it would be to play damn near every day.
What position?
That's the question, right? Alec Bohm is in his final year. They said that he's more than likely going to play a lot of shortstop during spring training. He's Miller, also going to play third base. Bohm, right? Correct, yeah, Miller. So Miller's going to play a lot of shortstop. He's also going to play third base. But if they feel good with him at shortstop, most people feel good flipping to the other side of the diamond. And you have a guy who he's figured some things out offensively in the second half of last year, but has been down offensively the last two seasons and also only has one more year than Alec Bohm. He's not as expensive. And I'm, you know, we're talking about cost is always a part of it, but to ignore that part of it for now, can Aiden Miller force his way into one of those spots in the infield, whether it be third base or second base? And that's probably going to have to be coupled with those other guys really struggling and just looking lost at the plate, which I don't anticipate happening. But Miller has taken a little bit of time getting going at every level. Maybe the same thing happens here. But if he looks electric in spring and they need a boost to that lineup, could he make his way onto the major league roster on opening day?
I suppose it's possible. Yeah.
Yeah. And it would be a little less relying on a guy because you know that you have Boehm and Stott there if needed. So if he finds a way, maybe it's not opening day, but early in the season to crack the big leagues, that'll be interesting to watch. It would have to start with him being hot in spring training and then carrying it over into the regular season. So,
yeah.
Another thing to watch for us.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is – have you ever been to spring training as a fan?
One game.
Okay. I have not.
Last year. Oh, we should make it happen. It's wonderful down there.
I like Clearwater. I've been there when I was in Tampa, and I've been to spring training working, but never just gone down and, you know, kicked back in the stands, and I've never seen a game in Clearwater. So even when I've been to spring training games, it's been elsewhere. It's something got to make happen soon, but I love having baseball on the TV during the day, on in the background. I love hearing guys talk about performance and pitches and swings and all this stuff. And it's just, I don't know if this is the best time of the year, but this is like, there's just a promise in the air when spring training starts that just makes me feel different than any other point. So this is for a couple of reasons, weather-wise, all that kind of stuff, but also, you know, baseball season, we know it's our favorite sport. So the fact that baseball's around the corner, this couldn't be better.
Yeah, man, I am pretty excited for sure. Like you said, just hear the pop of the mitt in the background. It's always fun. And listening to the announcers during spring training to me is always fun because you do get some good insight about what some of these minor leaguers are working on, stuff that you might not know otherwise. But you also hear a lot of funny stories, and luckily McCarthy and Kruk are great already together during the regular season. When there's important things to focus on, they still bring the fun. So excited to have a lot of fun going on in the background during spring training. And we'll learn some things about some Phillies we're not too familiar with so far.
Yeah.
Well, that about wraps it up for us here on the Brotherly Glove podcast. We went through all of our spring training storylines. We touched on the latest news. Zach Wheeler keeping his rib. Going to have to talk to him about that. See if he needs a display case or some sort of animal horn stand to put that thing on. And then obviously Nick Castellanos wishing him well, but he moves on his comments. And of course, Bryce Harper reacting to the Dombrowski not elite comments once again. Hopefully all that drama is behind us and we can focus on the game itself. If you're locked in to us here on the Brotherly Glove podcast, then you can have a few things to look forward to yourself. Our next episode will be our pitching preview, doing deep dives into the starting rotation and that revamped bullpen we discussed. How will the Phillies survive without Ranger Suarez and likely at least a month of Zach Wheeler? We'll dive into it in depth. And then next week, we will touch on our outfield DH preview and also do a separate preview for the infield and the catcher position with the return of JT Realmuto. Johnny, anything else for the people before we say goodbye?
I got something for you. I just thought of this. So I'm putting you on the spot.
Let's do it.
I don't really have an answer, but I thought the All-Star Games in Philadelphia this year. So really looking forward to that whole week of festivities.
Yes, sir.
How many, we talk about some of the movement in and out, some of these young guys, how many All-Stars do you think the Phillies will have on the team in Philadelphia, the Midsummer Classic? Keep in mind, they had the guy who was leading the league in hits at the time last year, did not make the All-Star team. And the guy who finished second in Cy Young voting last year also did not make the All-Star team.
Yeah, yeah. The things we need to consider, we talked a little bit, at least between ourselves, about the ridiculousness around the All-Star choices last season in Philadelphia. I think we may get a little bit of a bump celebrating 250 years of being a country. So I'm going to go with four Phillies make the All-Star team. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper both make it. And I'm going with Chris Sanchez and Joan Duran as the pitchers for the
I had the same four. I think there's going to be another. And I'm going to go with Alec Boehm.
Alec Boehm, nice. Two-time All-Star? Ooh, we'll see. Final season under contract would be big for the Phillies and big for himself if he had one. Final thought on the Phils. First off, great question. Love it. Alec Boehm recently said his focus this year, he doesn't care what his contract looks like. He's focused on being a dangerous hitter behind Harper and Schwarber once again. So if he's able to do that, he will find himself to the Midsummer Classic. without a doubt, in my mind at least. Probably not in the home run derby. I think if you have Harper and Schwarber in there, probably one of those guys will step in. But it'll be a fun festivities. We'll let you guys know where we'll be at as we get closer to that time. But for now, let's just sit back, kick our feet up, enjoy the spring, and make sure that you enjoy some brotherly glove right in your ear holes. For my brother Johnny, I'm Kyle. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate all the love. We love all of you. Make sure you listen. Share it with your friends and family. Like, subscribe, review, whatever you got to do. We appreciate all of it, just like we appreciate you all. And we appreciate each other, Johnny. I appreciate this time with you. I've said appreciate way too much. That word is going to depreciate in value, even if that is a word. However, we'll talk about it more in the next one. Love all you guys, and we'll see you next time here on the Brotherly Glove Podcast.
See you.